Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist. How are you tonight, Laura?
I'm great. How are you?
I, too, am great. I'm tired. I was just sharing. I have been in Detroit, Michigan at a family wedding, which was really fun, but, of course, exhausting. And we drove back, and I made it back in time to use the restroom and do the show. So here I am.
Oh, well, I'm glad you had a good weekend. I'm tired, too, but for a different reason. Johnny and I walked a four-mile walk today, and that's a lot for me. It was fun.
Ooh.
Johnny's actually is holding up five, so more like 5 miles. It was fun, but I am worn out, just worn out. So
that's a long walk.
That is a long walk, isn't it? I'm proud of myself that I can make it without calling 911, so there you go.
Oh, good.
Oh, let me get into a couple of announcements before we get rolling, and I'm determined we're only going to do one show on this topic, and I have a couple pages of notes, so we better get going with announcements and roll right on.
Okay.
Conference dates. I'll be in Atlanta on September 27th and 28th, and that is getting registrations every day. So if you want to come to Atlanta, you better get on it so you are not left without a seat. In Columbus, Ohio on October 11th and 12th, and then Chicago on the 25th and 26th. And for all our Illinois listeners, or if you're, well, I guess it would just be for Illinois early intervention providers. Both days, the conference has finally been approved by Illinois' early intervention program, and they have to get, you know, like we do in Kentucky, they have to get so many hours of continuing education, but they have to have everything pre-approved. So it's a really big deal to those providers to know that the course they're going to has already been reviewed and approved. So both in, gosh, 10 days or so, the first day was approved, but the second day wasn't. Who knows why? But now both days are approved, so I wanted to say that. And for Georgia early intervention providers, that has been submitted to the Georgia system, but the person who approves those courses has been on maternity leave until tomorrow. So I anticipate that we'll get that approval. We got it last year. I don't think it's going to be. I've never been turned down for anything I've applied for, so that should be approved within the week or so. So I wanted to just mention that for those events, and all the events are filling up. So if you want to come, especially if you're coming from out of town, you better go ahead and register, because once the mailers go out to the local people, that's when it usually starts getting pretty full. So I wanted to mention that. Secondly, I got a new therapy tip of the week up on Friday, and this one is about ideas for using water and for playing with sand in therapy. Cheap ideas, fun ideas, so I wanted to mention that. I don't think you've gotten to watch that yet. Kate, you've been out of town, haven't
I
you?
I watched it in my car.
You did?
Look
at you.
I did. I'm so high tech. Ha, ha, ha. It worked
out.
I can see it.
Oh, that's good. Well, good for you. All right. So I wanted to mention that. And
I wasn't driving. For those of you who are wondering, I was not driving. Bill was driving. I was watching the video.
That's funny. I didn't think about that. And I wanted to thank the people that are sharing that on their own pages. That seems to happen more frequently now, and I love it when other speech pathologists post my videos on their own pages. And so thanks so much for doing that, or early interventionists. And we even have some daycare providers who are posting that. I wanted to mention this one lady's name. I know, I think it's Child's Hearts Daycare. I don't know if I can get back over there fast enough to look at that. But she's been sharing lots of things, so thank you so much. That's very sweet. Tonight we're going to talk about some ideas that I think be relevant for her and for other therapists who provide therapy at child care centers and in home daycares. And these ideas also really work well for siblings. So many times, even when we see our little clients in home-based programs, there's a brother or sister or two or seven at home. So wanted to mention that these ideas will also work when you're trying to incorporate siblings into sessions, especially for twins. Twins are so difficult because even though, you know, usually, you know, you've got two children, they're the same chronological age, a lot of times the developmental age is different. Maybe one twin needs your services and one doesn't, or whatever, but still twins and even triplets pose a real special set of circumstances. And I've worked with tons of multiples over the years. Haven't you, Kate?
Not tons. I've certainly worked with some, and I have some right now, but I would not say tons for whatever reason.
I would say tons. And so these ideas work really well for that, too. So if you're a mom and you're listening and you're thinking, oh, she's not talking about something tonight that's, they're talking about something that doesn't relate to me. If you have other kids at home, you can use these ideas as well. And I wanted to mention that because that might not cross someone's mind if we didn't really talk about it. So, and this idea for the show was suggested by Letitia, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, on Facebook a couple of weeks ago when I asked for podcast topics, and she submitted this idea, so I wanted to thank her for coming up with this. I think we have done a show about this, but it was a long, long, long time ago. Do you remember that?
I think so, too, yeah. But a couple years.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years, and I meant to go back and try to dig it out of the archives and listen, but then that makes me a little bit anxious sometimes when I listen to previous shows. I'm a little too critical of myself, so I did not do that and put myself through that torture. These ideas may be the same. They may be completely different. Who knows? It's neither one of us can really remember, other than we did this. We did the show. But I want to start by talking about what's an ideal situation for working with a child in daycare or child care or whatever you want to call it. Because I think a lot of times in our state early intervention programs, the recommendations that we get really are to work with the ideal situation. And that would be to really collaborate with the teacher and to go through the child's wonderfully scheduled, you know, time that you're there, and everything just works like clockwork, and it's all based on best practices, and you could really, you know, shoot a lovely hour of video when you were there because everything would just fall into place and there would be no interruptions or whatever. And so we're going to talk about that kind of situation first, and then we're going to talk about the real world, because I think it is great to say that we're going to walk into a child care center and we're going to just fit right in with whatever's going on with the child in that day, and we're going to be able to talk with that teacher at will and just make all kinds of wonderful recommendations that she is going to follow through with immediately, and everything's just going to be great until the next time we go back and visit that kid. And again, that is the ideal. And I have had some child care settings that I've worked in that have been so great like that, where the schedule is pretty set, where they're actually following what the, you know, they have a lesson plan, they're following through, you go right in, you kind of milk right into whatever is going on in that classroom, you're able to work with your child within that activity and make suggestions for the teacher so that she can carry those ideas over. I certainly have had situations like that. And, Kate, I know you've worked in some great child care places because you'll call me and you'll say, oh, my gosh, that, you know, that was great. Or, you know, we're able to find some really positive recommendations for places based on how nurturing they are with kids and how developmentally appropriate the activities are, and, you know, the places are well-staffed, and, you know, everything is just goes beautifully. So, again, that's the ideal, and that's, again, what our state early intervention programs want to talk about, is really providing those consultative services where you're just going in and making suggestions, and the teacher is, and the director are happy that you're there and welcome you and want to hear what you have to say and gladly implement those ideas into routines with the child that you happen to be working with. And again, providing strategies for teachers as you go and having a teacher really want to hear those things and really value your recommendations, you know, that's the ideal situation. And if we were talking about what we hoped would happen with every child, that would be it, that you would go in and that you're following already beautifully arranged day and it will just fit right in and it goes very smoothly. And that does happen and that does exist. And I'm not trying to be negative when now we're going to talk about what happens all the rest of the time. Because I think that's where we really, really struggle. And again, I don't want this to be an overt negative show where we're slamming daycare and childcare. And, you know, I've been a working mother forever, so I'm certainly not here to do that. I just want to talk about the things that, ideas for you to use in situations that aren't as I previously described, because that happens a lot, don't you think?
Yeah, I have to be honest and say when I read the topic for the show, I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, and really, the only reason I felt that way is because I do go to a lot of daycares that are not necessarily the ideal, you know, that don't mm-hmm. really follow the model that we wish they all did. And those daycares, it's a lot harder to follow the recommendations of the state, and, you know, it's just not as, you know, those are the daycares that have no real curriculum or routine or structure, or, you know, half the time they don't even have the most basic of toys, you know, it's just
right
stuff and not much of that, and that makes it a lot harder when you're dealing with that. Or, you know, I still go to daycares routinely where what they do is watch a lot of videos, you know,
yeah.
Which seems hard to believe since, you know, I don't know. But it still is very common in my world. So, you know, it's unfortunately, I wish every
it
daycare
happens.
I went to, yeah, I wish they were all just the way they're supposed to be. But that just isn't necessarily the real world. So
right. And so we're talking about real-world situations tonight where, and again, I just wanted to be clear that we're not trying to be negative or slam daycare or anything like that. We're just wanting to provide some ideas for when things don't go as beautifully as you would hope that they would go. And just, and again, we're giving these ideas with things that we've actually done, not from an academic perspective where we're sitting in our office in a university and writing about how it should be, which is what I think happens a lot. And even if those people may have worked in early intervention systems, you know, in like 10 years ago or whatever, they're writing about from the ideal, you know, ideally you're going to collaborate and ideally you're just going to be a consultant and you're just going to tell them what they should do and everything's just, oh, it's just going to be perfect because then you can't have
them. And they're
really
going to be so anxious and willing to respond to what you say. And I feel that way too about the whole consultative model and the way that they, you know, trying to pick the way family situations are. And certainly we all have those wonderful families that really do fit that mold beautifully, but then there are those families that don't. And everything is,
right.
They don't seem to write about the exceptions. They just write about the ideal.
Right. And so mm-hmm. we're going to talk about the rest of kind of the real world stuff and what you can do. First of all, I think, well, let's talk about what would be the complete opposite of that collaborative, consultative approach. It would be where you pull the kid out and do therapy like that. And in some daycares, that's still what they really want you to do. And I'm not going to tell people not to do that. If the daycare director is saying to you, I don't really want you in that classroom, I'd really rather have you out separately. And they may not say that. They may say, I think he's going to pay attention better, or mm-hmm. I think he needs the one-on-one or whatever. But for whatever reasons, a lot of times programs really don't want you in the classroom. And so, you know, as a real-life therapist who sees kids in that situation, I'm not really going to ever argue with a person who's telling me, I don't want you in there. I might, you know, say, gosh, I really want to see kind of how he is interacting in the classroom, and I want to talk to the teacher and see what I can help her with. But if I still had a director say, that's great, honey, but I want you to see him here in this room. That's how we've done it for the last 20 years, and I want you to do it that way too. I'm not really going to argue so much with her because I'm a guest in her facility, and she can disinvite me to come, and I have to remember that as the business owner's perspective, I have to abide by that. And while, again, it's not always ideal, you would want to be able to talk to the teacher and talk with her about and see kind of what her issues are. And sometimes we can observe kids in a classroom setting and they're totally different than how we think they would be, and then we're able to make better recommendations. But when a director or an owner or whatever says to you, here's your room, I don't really fight that too much. Do you?
No. And I mean, that's why I kind of was a little bit taken aback by the topic, because I thought, I don't really stay in the room that much. I'm pretty bad about going with the nature of the place and the feeling, and sometimes it isn't, like you said, they don't overtly say you cannot stay in the room, but they basically kind of do.
It tends to be
in those daycares that are not necessarily the cream of the crop, you know, and unfortunately, there are quite a few of those, and there, you know, there's a handful of great, and then you have your middle, and then you have your lower end of daycare quality. But yeah, it's well, we can talk about it further, but I do pull them out probably more than I should. I just think, well, the reality is, it's exactly those kind of places that when you do try and stay in, oftentimes it's not really very productive, and there are a variety of reasons why, but mostly it's because there is no real routine or structure in the in that classroom.
Right.
So it can be really hard to do an hour, and sometimes I feel like it's productive for the group, not necessarily terribly productive for the kid I'm supposed to be working with.
Exactly. And you know, I haven't had a daycare kid in well over a year. And so the last daycare kid that I did see, it was a little girl who happened to live right next door to me. So, and again, oh boy, wasn't that just the best case scenario. And then she started going to daycare. And I did still see her kind of half at home, half at daycare. But it was that kind of situation where they didn't want me in the room. And when I tried to stay in and work, it was actually so upsetting to the staff that I started to feel like they didn't want me there. And that's when I just completely would say, I might stay in at the very beginning and lead a little activity like we're going to talk about, and then I would pull my little girl out. And the other reason that I still was saying that was pulling her out is I felt like she got so little one-on-one attention. And for her, she would look at me like, thank you, you know, when it was, and she would try to pull me when it was obvious to her that I was going to stay in and do a song or do whatever. She didn't really want to share me with her little friends. And she could communicate that, not even so much with words, but just with her facial expressions and her gestures and standing up and, you know, pulling me to the door. And how can you argue with that? With you know, her kind of, come on, you're my friend. I don't want to share you with these people. Come on. So that's another reason that sometimes it happens. And again, this is real world. It's not totally ideal, but that's kind of the other end of that, where you weigh your options, you weigh your factors, and you decide, okay, I would much rather not pull him out and it be this way, but this is what I've got to work with, so I'm going to do it. There are some children that if you try to stay with them in the classroom, you accomplish absolutely nothing because of their own needs. And so for those children, too, I think you can make a really good clinical case for, no, this is at least part of the time we're going to be one-on-one, and here's why, and I'm sticking to it. This is what I say for him. And so, you know, again, there are those kinds of situations, too. But let's talk about those in-between kids or those in-between situations where you pretty much end up leaving the classroom activities for, if not the whole entire class, at least part of the class. And a lot of us don't like to do that because we feel like we're, not really meeting just the needs of the child that's there. But I've had some pretty positive outcomes by doing therapy this way. I feel like I've been able to really help a lot of teachers, a lot of daycare teachers, at least, you know, see a better way to do things, and sometimes that's not, again, met with complete resistance, but it's not necessarily, they won't tell you quite up front, oh my gosh, I love what you did, or I'm going to use that. You know, you don't really have to have that kind of praise or acclaim before you know that you've made a positive impact too. And so the ideas that we're going to talk about the rest of the show are for that kind of situation where you're working with a small group of children or even, you know, the whole darn class, because it certainly happens. I think circle time activities work really, really well in that situation, especially if they haven't already had their established circle time. I don't necessarily shy away from those activities, even if they have, because sometimes the circle time that the teacher has had looks so dramatically different than what I would do for that situation. And in my mind, I'm thinking, this is staff education just as much as it is for the kids, because they need to see what a developmentally appropriate group activity looks like. And it's so sad that a lot of times our ladies that are calling teachers in that situation have had absolutely no training. So they don't even know what it should look like until someone shows them. And what better way to show them than to really model it and to do it for them. And then they can say to you, well, that's not going to work because, or whatever, and you can help them problem solve, not only for the kid that you're seeing, but for other kids in the classroom too. And I've had some pretty good successes with even working with teachers who did seem less than happy for me to be there in the beginning. But it's all the way that you promote it and that you're able to just kind of say, let me just show you what I would do, without it being overly bossy or authoritative or critical. And I think that's what happens a lot, is a lot of our daycare staff feel really threatened almost. Or they, you know, they think you're going to tell on them, you know, that you're going to call the state, or you're going to, you know, the licensure board, or, you know, what, however your state is set up. And so if you can kind of go in and disarm those feelings of defensiveness, you can get a lot further. And again, that's just, you can't really teach somebody how to do that. And, you know, that's just learning how to work with people and how to make people feel more comfortable that you're there, and the whole I'm in this with ya situation, rather than I'm here to tell you that you're doing it all wrong. And I understand why those teachers would feel that way, because they automatically feel a little bit threatened that a therapist is going to come in anyway, don't you think?
Yes, oftentimes. And I couldn't be further from the truth as far as, you know, I mean, I would love if every kid I worked with was in the best daycare. But generally, you know, I'm there to do my job, and I really try to not be too judgmental. But I do think sometimes therapists in general sometimes occasionally will kind of present things that way, and they've had a bad experience in the past. Or I've even known of cases where therapists did call the state because of numbers or whatever, and it's like, that's not me. You know, I'm not me.
I'm here for the daycare police.
Yes, that's not me. But yeah. I do think that some daycares are very guarded, and they'll let you in, but it's on their terms.
Right, right. And so if you are going into a classroom and if you can really help the teacher like you and feel like that you're there to help and that you're there to make really positive, easy suggestions, and that's a word I say all the time to daycare people, let me show you some easy stuff. Let me show you some stuff that, you know, this is a winner. This works for every place I've ever showed it to. And then they start to feel more comfortable and just like you said, they let their guard down, that you can mm-hmm. do some things with them. Now, sometimes so far the other way, that they see you coming and they pretty much say, okay, smoke break for me, I'm here. And you
yeah.
don't really want that either. Want that. But you do want it where they feel pretty comfortable to let you kind of do your thing and, you know, kind of alongside them. So, again, I think circle up time activities work really, really well for this kind of thing. And so songs with hand motions and little finger plays I think are always winners. Now, you can't do 25 in a row. You need to do a couple that you really, really like, that you think the kids might already be a little bit familiar with, but not so familiar that they don't want to do it with you, that it's really boring. So if you know that the teacher sings, if you're happy and you know it, almost every day, don't sing that song unless you're going to put a really fun spin on it, or you're going to teach the kids a new way to do it, or some new little motions to do. Other ones, Itsy Bitsy Spider is a good one to do. Kids kind of universally love that. Open, shut them. I think Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes, that's a fun song to do, and I let kids stand up to do it, and sometimes standing up during circle time is a big no-no. So if you've let them do it, they all, you know, it's so novel that you say, we're going to stand up, that they like that, and that's kind of a fun thing to do. Other little songs that I love, that any of those five, you know, five in the bed and the little one said roll over, roll over, or five little monkeys jumping on the bed, or five little monkeys swinging in the tree, those kinds of songs are fun. And you really want to be sure that you are an enthusiastic singer, even if your singing voice isn't great, that you are really into it. And, again, you're modeling for that teacher how animated and how fun and how playful she needs to be. And a lot of times adults have never really seen another adult do that person. I mean, it's always a surprise to me when I see the teacher paying as much attention as sometimes the kids are. And I'll think, wow, you know, she's probably never seen this, or she doesn't remember this. And again, that's intimidating to some therapists because they think, oh, I don't want to do that. You know, this is like I'm performing or whatever. But really, that's how we have to do it. And what better way to teach a teacher or a mom or another therapist or whoever how to do it than just to show them and just to model it for them. And I think it's I would rather me act animated and fun and silly and playful rather than sit there and lecture another person how to do it. I'd rather them see me do it first before I start making a ton of suggestions for how they can fix themselves.
And I think it's a little less off-putting if you're just going in there and doing it as opposed to, okay, now I'm going to pull you aside and tell you how it should be done properly. You know, that's kind
right.
of... That's kind of offensive for a lot of people, and if you're just showing it, you're just kind of there doing your thing. And I do think sometimes you see them watching you and thinking, you know, that got a good response.
Yeah, or you'll see them really kind of get into it like the kids, or just maybe it's not even like that, but their defenses are just down. Or they'll say, boy, you really like your job, don't you, or something like that.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. And so that's a good thing when you're doing it that way. And sometimes if I'm sitting in circle time and it's not going really well and I can tell that I'm making the teacher uncomfortable, I'll just say, hey, can I do one? And I have never, ever, ever had anybody say no. Now, they may be surprised. They may, you know, even look a little bit like, oh, my gosh, But I've never had anybody say no. And so then if you can just kind of jump up, and I'm not bothered by that either. Even if somebody said no, I would probably say, oh, come on, let me do it. And it would just kind of alleviate that whole thing. And you couldn't do that with every teacher, really structured people. But most of the time, for the most part, I think they would be happy to let you jump in and try one. So some songs that are your go-to songs that you could do some fun things with. My very favorite Circle Time song that I did when we ran our playgroup program was the Where Oh Where song. And, again, I've never had one 2 or 3-year-old not like this song. And we talked about it a lot on the show. But if you're a new listener, you may have never heard it before. But you have a kid hide under the blanket, and you sing, you know, where oh, where oh, where is Kate? Where oh, where oh, where is Kate? Where oh, where oh, where is Kate? Where can Kate be? You might want to slow it down. I'm going faster just for the purpose of the demonstration. But then you have the kid pop out. If the kid doesn't automatically come out, you pull the blanket off their head and you all scream boo. That is a riot in a toddler classroom. And that song is very catchy. It doesn't have very many words. Kids like it because they're saying their friend's name. Every kid wants a turn. So, and again, it's a kind of a time filler. It takes, you know, a while to get through every kid, but because you're changing the routine or changing the kid who's the focus, you know, everybody gets their turn and they kind of hang with you. So that is my number one go-to activity every day, or family daycare, or even if you're doing it just with siblings and mom, dad, or whatever, everybody's got a blanket laying around that they can use. If you don't think the daycare will have that, take one with you. You could, a blanket works really well, though, for that, rather than you could use some other objects, but I think a blanket works the best. So that's my number one routine. And, oh, so many daycare workers, daycare teachers, say that they use that a lot and that kids ask for that song and they like that. So I think that's always a winner. You've done that one, haven't you, Kate?
Oh, yes, I have done that one. And it is universally appreciated.
Yeah. So that's a great one. Another routine that I have done with kids, but they really like this too, and my daughter, who's now 16, loved this little routine when she was in her 2 year old preschool class, and they did it all the time, and I've done it since then, but it's Jack in the Box. Do you know this one, Kate, where you squat down on the floor, and you say, everybody squats down or crouches down or whatever your word is, but you're standing, you're still kind of standing on your feet so that you can jump up, but you say, and you do it really quietly but really animated, and you say, Jack in the Box, sit so still. Won't you come out? And then you pause, and then you jump up and scream, yes, I will, and hold your hands up. Again, 2-year-olds love it. Even if they've seen it 15 times, that surprise factor of pausing with the jack-in-the-box, sit so still, won't you come out? And then jumping up, yes, I will. And again, a winner. Lots of kids love it. It's an easy kind of way to pull kids in that won't typically do hand motions. Sometimes, well, our kids with developmental delays can't quite get those hand motions coordinated with a song. But this is just jumping up from the floor, and again, they'll usually scream, ah, or something. And so that's another fun one to do, too. And it also alleviates the whole, you have to sit there perfectly still and not move. It kind of gets the teacher out of that so that you're helping her realize that 2-year-olds and 1-year-olds and 3-year-olds, whatever age group you're working with, that they developmentally it's not appropriate for them to be able to sit still for 30 minutes straight and scream out the names of flashcards. So teaching her other fun activities that she could do during that circle time. So, and when I lead the circle time activity too, I'm really kind of coaching the teacher, and I'm saying, okay, they seem kind of restless, so we better try one with movement. Let's try this. And so you can kind of talk out loud through some of that. And that gives her a way to start to think about it. She may never have thought about that before. Before, circle time for her might have been the pledge and saying the days of the week. She might not have even thought about doing some of these other things that are more fun. So get yourself several go-to songs and little routines like that that work pretty well for a circle time, and try to alternate them between ones that you move a lot on and then ones that you're just kind of sitting and doing hand motions to. If you need help with that, Teach Me to Play With You is the first therapy manual that I wrote, and it's full of finger plays and songs and little activities like that. So if you don't know very many of those songs and don't know the hand motions or how to make those fun, that would be a great resource that I would recommend. Another circle time activity, or that's close to this, is modeling how to read a book to the class. And again, a lot of times our daycare teachers haven't heard someone do it where it's interactive and you want kids to participate and where you're really into it and animated. So you want to do that. Sometimes I'll even watch YouTube videos of people that are supposed to be pretty good. You would think, you know, they made a YouTube of themselves reading a book, you know, to children, and they're still pretty monotone, pretty flat. And so I'll think, well, no wonder this person, you know, Miss Tiffany, who's all of 19 and who's a daycare teacher and has had no formal training, doesn't know to do this because she hasn't heard anybody do it in a better way. And so that's another thing that I've done from time to time is do a book like that. Try to pick books that are pretty repetitive. I like ones that have lines that kids can scream out, or at least kind of a keyword. Brown bear, what do you see? I see a yellow duck looking at, and then you pause for the kids to say, me. And if you're working on that word or working on that sign, you can teach the whole class to pat their chest and scream out, me. And that whole vocal contagion piece where everybody's saying the same thing at the same time is really powerful for lots of our late talking friends, and they'll start to do it in the context of all their little friends doing it too. So that's another good idea. Other books that I remember, this one daycare, it was at the, did you ever go to the daycare, take the Ford plant? I don't think it's open anymore, but did you ever go to any of those?
No, I remember hearing that it was good, but I never did have it. I think it did close. I never had a child there.
Yeah. Great daycares, and they had two in Louisville, and I saw kids at both of those locations, and they always had great books. And I remember one little guy that I saw, no was the only word that he could say. And so we did those little David books. Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you seen those? They're really cute. They're not board books, I don't think. I've only seen them as paper books. But his daycare teacher said, why don't we try this book? I bet he'll like it because it's his word. It's no. And so we did that as a circle time activity for his class, and he just totally lit up because it was something that he could do. And, you know, all the kids are screaming, you know, David is a mischievous little boy, and he does all kinds of things that you're not supposed to do. And his mom is always saying no to him, and it's, you know, it's funny and it's cute, and the art is precious. And so that was a great one. And I don't have any of those books, but as I was thinking about this topic today, I was thinking, I'm going to get on Amazon right after the show and order some of those really cute little David books because they were so cute. The Sandra Boynton books are really cute for that kind of activity too. Mooba, La La La, the Pajama book, any of her little books are cute for that sort of thing. And you can do a lot of education along these lines and talk to teachers about why these books are going to hold children's attention better and ways that they can keep the kids engaged. And you talk about, you know, helping children pay attention by using your voice, you know, just so many things that you can work into staff education when you're really teaching. And again, the best way to do it is just to read the book yourself and to show the teacher and really let her watch you do it in the way that you think would be more productive for kids in general, especially the kid that you're seeing. So those are great things you can do. Other things that I like to do that are along the lines, but not necessarily in the context of circle time, are just playing little games where the kids have to follow directions. And I used to try to do all these kinds of things, too, just with my little classes that I would, materials that I would see at church, and just have them try to imitate or copy any little movement you would do, you know, holding your hands up in the air, touching the floor, hopping on one foot. You could sleep, you could kick, you could dance, you could shake your arms or legs, you could touch your knees, anything like that, you know, if you're all kind of just standing around with nothing to do. That teaching that kind of body imitation is huge because, one, it's part of learning how to imitate, and, two, for so many of our little guys that aren't really, that are developmentally delayed and then aren't really even participating in those kinds of group activities, it gives them something easy enough to do. So I love doing little games like that, and I think you can be really fun and get kids to want to do it with you. And it certainly is a way that you can hold a lot of kids' attention, but it's all in how you present it and how silly and fun and goofy you act while you're doing it. So those are fun little things to do. You can do those other kinds of games too if you're sitting down at the table. I think it's a good thing to do either before or after snack time when you're trying to kill some time there. Maybe you're waiting on children to go to the bathroom, or you're, you know, you've got 5 minutes before you're supposed to go to music or whatever. You can do those little things where you're having, you know, you do an act and you have them copy you, and those can be fun little routines too. There are some books that I've used that are really similar to those activities. Barney has a Pat Your Head book. Have you seen that book, Kate?
It's old. Don't know that I have, no.
It's a board book, and it's Barney, and he's telling his friends. Is Barney even on anymore? I don't even know if Barney's on PBS anymore. That's how old we are.
I don't know if it is. I have kids in daycares who still watch it because they use the old DV or whatever, the VHS tape still.
Yeah.
So I still have occasional Barney Kid, but I don't know if it's on TV still.
Well, there's a Barney book, and I know about this because my boys, who are 23 and 20, turning 23 and 20, liked those books, and Macy had those books too. And so, but it's a cute little Barney board book, and he's doing various actions, and the children pictured are copying him. And so that's the way that I've been able to get lots of kids to do it. And again, I think sometimes it's almost easier when you have a group of children doing it that would, you know, usually typically developing kids. If you get one or two who are going to want to do it with you, it's going to make it easy for your little client to want to participate in that kind of thing too. There's an Elmo version of the book too, but I lost it or gave it away or something a long time ago, and I've never been able to find it again. And that's something I might add to my Amazon list today. But it's Elmo doing certain things like touching his nose, covering his eyes, shaking his leg. And that can be really, really fun, especially for kids who, I mean, you can go either way. Kids who love books will like to do it if that's something they like to do. Kids who hate books might be a little bit more inclined to do it if you're doing more than just reading to them or requiring them to look at the picture. So wanted to mention that as well. Another thing that you can do along those lines, if you have kids who are learning, you're working on verbs and action words, this is when you can pull out your super duper verb card set and everybody do what the picture is. And that really is the only time that you might ever hear me recommend flashcards. But that's kind of a fun thing to do if you see a kid that's, you know, whatever they're doing, you have the group of kids try to do it too, and you could have the kids draw the card out of your hand or pick a card. You could put several of those pictures in a bag and have them, you know, make a big deal about reaching in and getting the picture out. Oh, what's she doing? Show us, show us. And have the child try to do it. Now, 2-year-olds can't always do that. You know, they can't always look at the picture and then make themselves do what the person's doing, but you can help with that. And, again, it's really fun. We used to do it in play group, and I think kids like it. And, again, it's something new to do. It's not something you're going to do every day, but it's one more activity that you can do just to target something different. Other things that are really, really fun for small groups of children, I think a ring around the rosies is a winner with almost every group of kids I've ever tried to play it with for the past 25 years. What do you think?
Yeah, they love it. Well, I mean, really, a lot of the things, what something that unifies a lot of the things you've recommended is get them up and get them moving, which is sometimes
right.
The exact opposite of what happens in daycares. They want them to sit and listen. So, yeah, they love to get up and move. So, even
and
those kids
the
who can sit and listen, you know what I mean? They could, but yet they really love the get them up and moving stuff. And for a lot of the kids we see, if there isn't a movement component, they're probably not going to really take in too much of it. So,
exactly. So, ringing around the rosies is good. That's just a good time filler too. Ring around the rosies is also another great transition activity that if you want the kids to end up sitting, because you end that game down on the floor. We all fall down. And so after you've played it four or five times, that's a good way to kind of then segue right into your next activity, because they're all already in the perfect position to sit down and listen to you. So that's another great transition activity. Another really fun game along these lines is the walking, walking, or marching, marching song. I think I sang it walking, walking until you always started singing it marching, marching, didn't you?
Right.
Didn't you convince me to? Yeah. But this little song is fun. And you're doing a lot of different verbs, but you're acting out, you know, marching, 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 hop, 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 running, 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 now we stop. And kids love that. And, again, it's so fun to do if you're in a little classroom. Do it around the table. That's real fun. We do that in our new office. That's even one that you can do outside or even in a small space. You can do that activity. And I think it is a great way to engage a kid who normally wouldn't really want to participate in those kinds of things. So I've had a ton of kids really, really like that little song. So that's a keeper, too. Any kind of running game, you can put Ready, Set, Go. If you're in a big gym, if you're just in a small classroom with five or six kids, sometimes, you know, your daycare teacher might freak out if you're saying we're going to run. But you can have kids do all kinds of things. You can have them hop. You can have them crawl, you can have them tiptoe, you can have them pretend like they're going to fly, anything with that whole ready, set, go component. And that movement or running or any kind of little game like that, that's where you're going to see your kids who are usually disconnected and not participating with their friends. That's the first time you almost ever see an inkling of noticing another kid or another peer. So our little friends that are on the spectrum who do very little interacting with kids their own age, gross motor games like that are the very best way to get them interested in looking at other children and even watching other children. Even if your little guy's not running, you know, watching the other children as you're doing Ready, Set, Go is, I mean, I feel like goal met when a kid will start to notice his peers in that situation if he's been pretty isolated or, you know, not ever really engaged with little friends. So those little kinds of gross motor games are lots and lots and lots of fun. They're games that take a little bit more planning to accomplish with a small group of children like this. And, again, once you've made the activity, you can use it for the next 10 years. So some of these things that might take some time to put together, again, you can, you know, use them for the rest of your careers. But any kind of matching game that you're going to have lots of things to match. And my very favorite one I did probably, I've been using the same set for years and years and years, but it's just getting a poster board and then getting gift bows or, you know, present bows, some type of presents, those little sticky bows that match the poster paper. And so, you know, buy yourself little bags of those bows and match them. And so that you have, you know, 7 or 8 reds and greens and blues, and then set the paper across the room, and then you get on the other side of the room and hold the bag with the bows in them, and you have the kids, you know, pick a bow and then match it to the paper, and then you can turn it around and do it as a receptive activity when you've matched all the bows, and, you know, you're telling one child, go get a green bow, and everybody has to watch while he runs over and gets the bow and then comes back. Or, you know, you could even make it more difficult. Get a red bow and a white bow and have them run back. And again, bow isn't the most functional word in the world. And colors, you know, matching colors comes way before children understand colors receptively or name them expressively. So it's a developmentally appropriate activity to do in that kind of classroom. And you're getting... you're hitting all those cognitive prerequisites to using that kind of goal. You know, I don't really care if the kid is naming colors yet, but it is great when he's participating in a game with his peers, he's following some directions, he's staying with me, staying engaged, and I'm able to keep his little friends engaged too. You can match all kinds of things. In the wintertime, when mittens or gloves are on clearance, buy, you know, a dozen of those when they're all 50 cents, and then you can have kids match the, you know, one pair of the mitten to the other mitten. In homes, when there have been piles of shoes by the door, I've lined up one of all the shoes and then had the other mates to the shoes across the room, and we've matched like that. And the fun part of that is running across the room and finding the match. And you can get kids to participate in that, and you're all doing it together, and you can come up with whatever your target vocabulary words are for them to say or for them to understand or whatever. But the point is you've got an activity that you can fit your goals into that. And you can use anything like that. You could match Legos that way. You could do crayons. You could do anything that, you know, you have one set of a color, you know, or multiple color options with a set of that. So there could probably be lots of different materials that you could use for that same kind of a matching game. But those are really fun things to do. My other go-to game in this kind of situation would be taking in 2 or 3 wooden puzzles and me holding all the pieces. And so that a kid has to run, put the piece of the puzzle in the puzzle on the opposite side of the room and then run back. So those little puzzle races. And, again, you can target your receptive goals and your expressive goals. You can name the puzzle piece when you're going to put it in. I hear something beeping. Is that at your
house? Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. And then you can do it receptively, too. If you've had a farm puzzle and a transportation puzzle, you know, you're telling your little friend, go get the car. And they have to remember that and hold that, you know, in their working memories and run over and get it and then run back. And I've used those games with siblings, with small groups of children in daycare. You know, again, that's not an activity I would do with 15 kids, but with 3 or 4, that's pretty manageable and pretty fun. So I wanted to be sure to mention those. What are some other things you've done, Kate? I feel like I'm just blabbing on, but I'm trying to get through this whole list so it's all done in one show.
I don't think you've said this. I have done, like I said, up front, I am not a great poster therapist for working in the classroom, but on occasion that I have done it, and I have done it some, I've done a lot of things like, you know, bubbles and balloons. Mm-hmm. And those kind of group activities that all kids kind of universally love.
Right.
And
I think the thing with that is getting the teacher not to be afraid of that and not to worry too much about behavior. Because a lot of times when you're doing that kind of thing, you can see a teacher's blood pressure start to rise mm-hmm. right in front of you because she gets so, you know, scared that the kids are going to get out of control. And so you can just talk, you know, and really model how to really kind of bring it all down so that she's not, you know, screaming or, you know, really getting upset that the kids are getting out of control. And you can do things like that, you know, with if they're really kind of crazy, you know, you can get everybody to, with bubbles, you know, oh, to blow it, or, oh, this time we're going to do quiet bubbles. Shh, everybody, shh, shh, we have to be quiet for the bubbles. And you can do, again, things that you think, oh, my gosh, that's the dumbest idea in the world. But it really, really works. And whispering almost works better to bring down a small group of children than screaming does. But sometimes teachers know that. So with those kinds of activities, I think that those are good to model just to show a teacher a better way to kind of help control those things, don't you think?
Right. Laura, one other one I've done that I learned from you, and I haven't done it in a while, it must have been around Halloween time, and you taught me that Pass the Pumpkin one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I've done that.
That's a good one. And that's the song. You would stop at Walmart or the grocery store and buy a little pumpkin and have the kids sit in a circle. And you know, the song that you sing is, pass the pumpkin, all around, Halloween is coming, Halloween is coming to our town. And then, again, the kid's going to end up with it. And if it's a really kind of advanced group, you could get them to roll the pumpkin. You could say, roll the pumpkin to so-and-so, you know, a little friend name, and have them do that. Or if you think that would totally get out of control, you could just sing it, you know, 15 times in a row, because they don't seem to get tired of it, because you've given them the whole manipulative piece with passing the pumpkin. And you can really adapt that. The pumpkin works great for Halloween, but you could adapt it for other seasonal activities. You could sing Pass the Egg at Easter time, or Pass the Stocking, or Pass the Bells for Christmas, or whatever. So it's a cute little activity. But again, when you look at it, you think, gosh, how simple is that? But it does seem to hold a toddler's attention in a group.
You know, and in general, from what I see in daycares, even those daycares that do, now not the best daycares, but even that middle echelon of daycares that they really do try and do circle time and try and have educational things going on, it does seem like, and maybe I'm hypersensitive because the kids that I see are delayed, but I really think that in general, the biggest thing I wish I could affect would be to have them bring it down in general, as far as a lot of times it is too difficult. You know, they're really interested in teaching colors and the alphabet. And, you know, for most two-year-old kids, those things are just really not relevant or interesting, and they shouldn't be. And yet that, you know, because they're trying to be, quote-unquote, academic, and they, you know, so many kids don't really care about that or attend to that, that sometimes it just becomes this difficult period where you've got to do some teaching, you know. And and there might be one or two of the kids who's interested and knows the colors and maybe knows his ABCs, but most of the kids really aren't there and they really shouldn't be there. And I think that if, you know, they, in general, it's just it tends to be a little beyond where a lot of, and not beyond where they are because they're delayed, just beyond where they are because they're two or 18 months or so, you know, that's just not really inherently interesting for young kids. In general, that seems to be the biggest issue that I witness. You know, they're really trying and they really mean well, but they're just ahead most of the kids in the classroom.
So. Right, exactly. And so these activities, again, I don't want anybody listening to dismiss them thinking, well, that's not going to hold their attention. Your point is, it's those really simple, repetitive things that seem to work. And I think that's a great point. My fanciest activity that I've ever done with daycare kids, and these, I've done this more than one time, and every time I do it halfway through, I think, why am I doing this again? But it has really worked with my kids who for whatever reason, we've had social component, and maybe kids that aren't. I'm talking about the kids that I've used it with are not even on the spectrum. They've been kids that, just because of their temperament issues or because of personality things, they've been shyer. They don't really do anything with a lot of the other kids. They never, they may be talking, but they don't seem to really have connections with children in their class. And one little guy did it because mom said, I don't think he has any friends, and that is so distressing to me. So for these kids, I've taken pictures of every kid in the classroom, and we've put them, made two copies, laminated them, glued them to a piece of poster paper, and then played games with the cards. You can either have the kid come find his own picture and put it on there, or you're going to have a little friend name who it is. They can pick out the picture. Like, again, you're going to put the pictures in a bucket or a bag or something, and have the kid draw it out. And, again, that whole surprise anticipatory piece is huge with toddlers. And so they pick their friend out, and you say, Who's that? And they, you all scream out the kid's name, and then they go, usually, and I forgot to say this, when I make the poster, I just tape the sides and the bottom of the kid's picture so it's a pocket. So you put the kid's picture, behind his matching picture, so you've made a pocket. That game, I've left that in daycares after we've played it a time or two, and that's one that even reluctant teachers will thank me for and say, boy, that was good. I'm going to use that. They love that game. They'll ask me to play pictures or, let's do that. And so that's another fun one. But, boy, it takes some time. And you have to get the right kid that, you think could really benefit from that. That's not something I've done with every kid. It's something I've done with a lot of kids. My little girl that was a long time ago, the only kid that I really think is really qualified for a diagnosis of selective mutism. She loved that game, and she would name her friends in the context of that, more so at home than she did at school. But it was a real winner, and it's been a good game. And I wanted to mention that, and if you're an SLP who's got some time on your hands and you can do that, and now with all the whole privacy stuff, I think some daycares might balk if you try to do that, if they thought, if they didn't understand why you were really doing it. I guess now it'd be all but permission. But when I started doing this, 15, 20 years ago, we weren't too worried about all that stuff. You could take pictures of kids and it not be a big deal.
Right.
You might have to get permission and stuff now. But that's been a really fun game. And when we did, when I had my playgroup program, we did that, and kids liked that. And it is a way to help kids learn other kids' names in their class. And that's always fun when you see a new talker start to say his friend's names. And boys, mothers love that and love that their kids seem to have friends at school. So that's one. You could use them in three boxes. We haven't really talked about that, but you have to have the right set of kids that you don't think that would end up being a disaster. The last go-to game that I haven't mentioned is bowling, and I've done that in a lot of daycares. Have you done bowling in daycares, Kate, where you take your bowling?
I haven't. No.
It's a winner. It's
fine. I can see that. I do have that silly six pins or something, silly something or other bowling set.
I have that, but the one that and you bought me that one, but the one that I really use all the time is just one that I got at Walmart years and years ago, and the pins are a little bit bigger. And, of course, they're plastic with a plastic ball. And I've got them in a big old, laundry basket. Well, not a basket, like a net. Those laundry nets? Or those,
mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about. I keep it in there. And that has been a big, big, big hit with playing that kind of game. And you can get all kinds of language from that. And, again, it just depends on what your target is, whether you're working on single words or phrases or following directions or whatever. That bowling is always a fun thing. And I've had a ton of siblings really do well with bowling, too. So we're at the end of our hour. We're actually a little bit past it. But I hope that we've given you some ideas to use for visits at daycare. And, again, it's that, I love your terminology, that middle echelon where a lot of times we really need the help with, where they want you there, it's okay for you to be there, but you don't necessarily know what to do. And usually by one of these kinds of small group or even larger group games, you can model so many nice things for daycare teachers to be able to carry over when you're not there. And you can work in talking about all these things with a teacher without standing there lecturing them about how they can do it better. And I just think it solves a multitude of problems. And you really are collaborating and, you know, consulting at that point, too. They just need more of a model. And they need to see, you need to be the ideal when you're going in. And, again, that's hard for a lot of therapists to want to do that. But once you kind of get over that initial, gosh, I'm going to have to plan and have to think here, once you get over that, it's actually pretty fun. I actually look forward to those kinds of visits. And it's something different than you do with, you know, the rest of your home-based visits. So hopefully we've given
right. And I think that them seeing it work is the best sales pitch you can give. You know what I mean?
Right.
When the teacher or the caregiver sees it and you're showing, yeah, look at this participation. Look, everybody's on board here. I'm not having to force anybody to do this.
Right.
And not only the kid that you're there to see, but the other ones are participating, I think. It's hard to dispute that, you know.
Exactly. And then if things do come up, you can tell them how you would address it. You can say, well, what I would do is this. Or the reason that they're, you know, so kind of getting out of control is because of this. This is what we can do. And you can really work in a lot of that teaching in a less threatening, less condescending way even when you are wanting to change things that are there. And so I think it's a really good solution. And I think moms like it too when they know that you're really on board with helping the daycare teacher know how to work with their child better. And in an ideal world, that does carry over, but a lot of times it takes just them seeing it and seeing it and seeing it week after week after week. I didn't talk about, and this is the most negative situation, where we have someone who is with a state early intervention program and they're calling what they're doing therapy, but they're just going into the daycare and hanging out, and I absolutely hate that. And I think that that's why our academics in our field sit and write about the way that it should be, because there are folks who totally take advantage and totally abuse the system there, and I absolutely hate that. But then again, that kind of therapist is not going to be listening to this kind of show, so there you go. We've got to preach to the choir.
Right. Yeah.
And so our listeners would be the ones who are looking for new ideas and looking for better ways to do things. So there you go. All right, any parting words?
No, I don't think so.
All right, that's it for this week. Thanks so much.
Okay.
We'll be back next week.
Thank you. Bye.
All right.
Okay,
bye.